Thanks for attending. As some of you may have seen the plenary this morning, we, USENIX, unfortunately had a cancellation. Hillary got sick and asked who had a good presentation ready to go, and so I went and gave that. But of course, and that gave us a few hours to then come up with some good content for this slot to maximize the amount of value you get out of the conference. But of course, some of you will be a bit disappointed because you might have slept in and missed the plenary and wanted to see my talk now. So I certainly apologize. And it was videoed and the slides are online. And so ultimately you will not miss it, and you're welcome to shoot me emails and questions about it and hit me up at the conference as well. So the talk that I was to give for this slot was the Blazing Performance with Flame Graphs, and I'll do a summary of them in the next 30 minutes. And that plenary session was videoed, so you will get to see it. So what I'd like to do for 30 minutes is actually the other topic, and I'd actually discussed this with the USENIX organizers beforehand. I was actually wanting to give this talk during this slot as well, and we were thinking of dividing up this my 90-minute slot. So I already had this in mind, and because of the way things got shuffled, I now get to give the thing I wanted to give, which is although with only 4 hours prep, this is a short rundown on systems performance and how it's changed. And it's also the topic of my new book, which has just been released, and copies are a bit hard to get hold of right now because Amazon keeps selling them out, but hopefully they'll be more stocked. There's 18 copies on Amazon right now. That's really good. Not anymore. That's good too. Thank you. Not on .co.uk yet, hopefully. So a lot of you guys know who I am. I'm the recipient of the LISA 2013 award for suddenly giving a plenary with 1 hour notice. I know, and they gave me a certificate as well, thank you very much. And of course, when a USENIX organizer phones you and wakes you up at 8 a.m., and I heard who it was, it's like, okay, this is gonna be a intense morning. Quick, coffee, get dressed, get down there. So, I do tools, methodologies, and visualizations, and I mentioned I have just had a book published. I do lead performance. I'm the lead performance engineer at Joint. We are a cloud computing company, a service provider, and every day I'm working on performance issues. And since we have a cloud which is running all sorts of different things, it exposes me to lots of different applications. So I get to try out and I have access to dynamic tracing using Dtrace. I get to try out a lot of new things, specifically because I have problems I need to solve, and that's how things like flame graphs were born. Systems performance itself, what is systems performance? That is the analysis of the applications down to metal. So we tend to call this full stack engineering, although the term full stack engineering can mean different things. It often means the application environment. We're talking about, I'm a full stack engineer, I will go and do the Node.js or the PHP, I'll do the database work, and I'll do the web server work. For systems performance, when we say full stack engineering, we tend to mean everything from the operating system down to metal, and that includes everything below the system call interface, all of the kernel internals, and much as we wish we could avoid it, it also involves the firmware from time to time. I don't like debugging firmware performance issues because I don't have Dtrace and I don't have dynamic tracing, and so it feels like performance analysis from the 90s, which is the art of inference. And performance analysis from the 90s is actually what I'm talking about because performance has changed. The key point here, though, is when you hear systems performance, you think operating systems, and systems performance is more than just tuning the kernel. Systems performance is tuning the whole system, including the kernel, but it's also using the operating system and the kernel as a platform for analyzing the applications. The biggest performance wins are found where by tuning where closest to where the work is performed. And the work is performed by applications in their algorithms. Tuning applications is where you get the massive, massive wins, where you may get 2,000x wins, or I talked about one of them this morning, a 100x win. Tuning down into the kernel is often the domain of 5% wins and 10% wins and 20% wins. And a lot of us are in very busy environments, and so operating system and kernel tuning often gets overlooked. However, the piece that we're missing is that that some people miss is that the operating system can be used to analyze your applications in ways that is different. Doesn't mean it's better, it's just different, and different gives you a different perspective and exposure for performance issues. So I can use operating system tools to find out why MySQL is talking to disks, or why Node.js is allocating memory, and it may be easier, sometimes it's easier, to solve performance issues from that perspective than using the application tools and coming back down. So it's not just about tuning the OS, it's about apps as well. Instead of LAMP, think LAMP, not just AMP. Think the OS as well. 1990 systems performance, characterized or typified by text-based tools like VMstat, and I have a very old version of VMstat there that still has the scan rate and the page counters. Limited metrics and documentation, and there was only so much you could do, and the environment you were with, and I heard Narayan described it as the administrators or system administrators were often victims of the OS, where a proprietary vendor would give me a manual, I would then read the tools that they had given me and the metrics they had given me, and then I'd work within those confines. And that's what we did, and we got very good at it, as good as we could be, based on the tools we were given. Some performance issues could not be solved, and that was okay, because you just couldn't solve them. I can't observe these things. They're never going to be solved. Analysis methodology was constrained by the tools, so there's often a tool-based approach. And performance experts used inference and experimentation to figure things out. And I did a lot of performance analysis in this era, where I got very, very good at being able to run a VMstat, an IOstat, an MPstat, having a look at some system statistics, and being able to interpret various things on those columns. It's very intimidating for new users because it's hard to learn all those rules and figure out how to do this. It's almost as though there's the priesthood of VMstat, where a small select number of people know how to interpret the tea leaves and figure things out. And literature is still around. That's one of the bad things about the internet, is that things don't go away. And when people are learning performance and first getting into it and they start looking up just performance in general, or they're looking up systems performance, you see a lot of the techniques and methodologies and tools that existed in the 90s that we don't have to do today. We don't have to learn all this stuff today. Now, 2010s, open source is the norm. So it's the ultimate documentation if you need it. Good if you don't need it, but if you do, you can go and read exactly how things work. Dynamic tracing means we can observe everything. And it also liberates you from the metrics you'd like to see and the questions you'd like answered. Unlike in the 90s, where if you couldn't answer it, that's life. The vendor didn't provide the tool. Now, this on every operating system, there is some way to go and do dynamic tracing, whether it's dtrace or perf or systemtap or ktap or LTTNG or any of those tools. There's some way, you may not use it very often, you may only use it once a year, but there's some way that you can use it if you really have to answer that important question. Visualizations. There's now great visualizations to comprehend many metrics, and I'll summarize them in a moment. Cloud computing has changed things as well, which I want to talk about. Resource controls are on the table. And another pain of the documentation that never goes away on the internet is that it tells you to look at the physical system resources to see if they're maxed out. Well, nowadays there's so many resource controls, I can be limited by them first. So I want to look at them first before I look at the physical resources, because that can be the bottleneck. And methodologies. Nowadays, and I've been doing a lot of this, methodologies show us where to begin and steps to root cause. And I feel more liberated to document these. Previously, without dynamic tracing, coming up with methodologies we can ask and pose any question of the system is something of a tease. It's an academic exercise. Well, it'd be great if we could do a wait latency breakdown of syscall operations into all the different run states or wait states. But it's just kind of wasting people's time to discuss it because no one could actually do it. Nowadays, There's so much more metrics, there's so many more statistics, and then you have that dynamic tracing. Can always go and answer, fill in the gaps that you have. So it's easy to come up with methodologies because you know that it's not an academic exercise, that people can actually go and do these. 1990s, operating system internals. There have been some great books on operating system internals, including Bach's Design of the Unix Operating System, Vahalia's Unix Internals, the Solaris Internals series, which I ended up helping with the second edition. And in order to understand the operating system, these books are generally quite long and require dedication to get through. They're fantastic as references, but it requires serious effort to pick it up. Nowadays, we have dynamic tracing, and I've used the D-Trace pony mascot to show that it can obviously observe everything inside the system. It's really cool. Now, and we've started to see this in a couple of operating systems classes where the academics are bringing D-Trace into the classroom, so that when students are learning how systems calls work and the scheduler works and file systems work, you can D-Trace it or you can system tap it or whatever the tool is that you use so that you can watch it live. 1990 systems observability, again to show how things have changed. And at this point, this might be a little obvious. It's Solaris 9, which I've got used here as an example. Solaris 9 was state of the art. Solaris 9, I worked on it. Fantastic observability. You can see, well, anything. I've darkened areas of the system that you couldn't really see or was difficult to see. So applications, great. System library, system call interface. But once I go beneath the system call interface, there are parts in the IO stack I just can't see. But that's okay. We do the art of inference. We figure it out based on what we've got. I can't see what's happening at the device driver layer, but that's okay. We just figure it out. We learn all these funny rules. I can't see what's happening at the bridge controller. I can sort of figure out what's happening at the IO controller, network controller, and so on. Nowadays, for an example, I use SmartOS, but I've done these diagrams for Linux and other operating systems as well. Nowadays, the expectation is we should really be able to see everything. And if I need to go down to the device driver to answer a question, I'll just do that. Again, you may only do this once a year because that's the really critical issue that you have to root cause, that your CEO wants you to root cause it no matter the cost. So it's great that we now have this visibility. And of course, over time, as people expect to have this and people want this, there will be tools built upon these capabilities. So it's actually easier for you to go down to device drivers and figure out what's happening. I keep encouraging people to write tools that use the CPU performance counters, which you access on Linux using the perf command, some of the perf stat and other perf subcommands, so that you can see what's happening on the buses and the interconnects. So now that we have the expectation that we want to see this, I hope that there are better tools developed to make life easier. And I've done my part with D-Trace at least. Just as an example, I decorated this diagram with some of the D-Trace tools I've written over the years, although there's more. This is tools from the D-Trace toolkit and the D-Trace book. Lots and lots and lots. But the bigger point is anything we want to see, we should be able to go and see. And it's okay if you're not the person that writes the D-Trace tool or the system tap tool, the thing that everyone needs to understand is that it's doable. So you may have a team of people who are supporting your environment, and only one person can go and write a D-Trace script. That's fine, so long as the other people know that it can be done. And when they've hit that issue, they don't say, this can't be solved. They say, this can be solved. We need to get the other team member to give us the script that we can then use. So I don't say that everyone has to be able to use D-Trace, although it's great if you do. And of course, there's a great book on it. A couple of examples of D-Trace, but again, it's the same whether you're on, it's very similar if you're on other dynamic tracing tools. Just to give you an idea, if you've never seen this sort of thing before, of what they accomplish, that's a function inside the Illumos kernel called sparsync for ZFS. Actually, this is now in lots of different operating systems because ZFS is spreading everywhere and is becoming what seems to be the future of storage. Sparsync is used to flush a transaction group. It's part of the write path. And when you're flushing transaction groups, these things can hurt performance. And they can cause latency outliers because they happen to coincide with other requests that queued behind them, because it will create a mini burst of disk I/O. And so you have the end of tail latency. That actually got improved very, very recently by Matt Ahrens, but this has been a little issue we've worked on for a while. And I can just say, detrace it. Well, let's detrace sparse sync entry, get a timestamp on return to the delta, and now in a one-liner, although it's a long one-liner, I've rolled a tool where I can see that at this timestamp, sparse sync ran and took 12 milliseconds. At this timestamp, sparse sync ran and took 7 seconds for it to run. And if I notice that that corresponds with a spike in my application latency, then I have a good suggestion to continue that investigation. I have a good correlation. Maybe I should really look at this more closely, because it's probably caused by that. Any kernel function. You can write this thing for any kernel function. This kernel function that's doing checksums or resolvers or some other asynchronous activity, maybe that's hurting my application performance, and I want a quick tool to diagnose it. There's a Linux dynamic tracing example. I'm using perf events. Perf probe, add TCP send message, and then enabling it, all CPUs, call stacks, and then on the perf report, it's showing me when TCP send message fired, which is a kernel function to send a TCP packet or message, and then the call stack responsible. TCP send message called by SSHD ultimately, and there's the kernel stack that shows why it got there. So fantastic. You can also, when you look at call stacks in the world of dynamic tracing, any single entry in there. So I'm looking at this and I'm looking at, oh, do sync write, that's interesting, or sock AIO write. I'd like to know more information about that. You can trace it. So all of these become continued points that you can then instrument. And I don't demonstrate it here, but one of the capabilities perf has is that you can also instrument local variables. So I can say instrument do sync write and then give me local variables within the function that explains what's going on. Why would we do this? Workload characterization is a methodology that's actually really useful for debugging issues. So it's just turning on instrumentation and seeing what's going on. And you might find that, oh, I'm doing TCP send message from some weird path, I can just tune that away or eliminate it. Another difference for systems performance in the 90s, performance visualizations, text-based and line graphs. There's a disk IOPS line graph and good old xload. Iostat, which I do like Iostat, but it's what you can do with a text-based interface. In 2010s, performance visualizations, including heat maps and flame graphs. And so heat maps is something that I did at Sun a long time ago with Brian Cantrell. And we first did latency heat maps, where we put latency on the y-axis and the passage of time on the x-axis. I should say, heat maps did exist previously, but they weren't used for this type of performance analysis. They were used for things like looking at disk offset access over time to see the pattern of the heads on disk and things like that, where it's actually doing more of a map. But here we wanted to put performance metrics into a heat map, and it proved to be very, very useful. With latency heat maps, instead of looking at a line graph, you're looking at the, and Theo gave a good talk yesterday where he explained the creation of the heat map. Each column on the y-axis is a histogram. So normally it's a list of columns, but instead of the height showing the number of elements in that bucket, it is the darkness of the pixel. And one of the great values of the heat maps is I can spot outliers as points at the top of the heat map that might be causing individual performance issues. I can spot multi-mode distributions. And this is just a crazy distribution, but there's more than one mode. Things are changing over time. I can look at how balanced or grouped the data is. I can really get a lot of information that you just can't get from line graphs, median, max, standard deviation, 99th percentile. All of those numbers are still summary statistics. I like those numbers. I like to decorate my heat maps with those numbers. So long as the heat map is the background so that I can double check the full distribution. Flame graphs, which I talked about this morning, and I can summarize now. Flame graphs are an interactive visualization of stack traces. They consume any profile data with stack traces and a value. So that might be CPU sample. You're doing CPU sampling, and I have a stack trace for each CPU sample. I can do IO latency flame graphs, where each time I'm doing disk IO, the block device interface, or file system IO, I want to gather the latency, and then I can feed it into this visualization. The flame graphs itself, it's just a short Perl program I wrote and put on GitHub. It's now very popular. And it takes a, this is, the gray box on the left is real profile data. It's far too many lines to practically read, even though the profiler has tried to reduce it. And so it can create a visualization that you can navigate much more easily. And so I had a MySQL example. This is the same profile data that the gray box of text was showing. All stack samples, these are sorted. The axes, the y-axis is the stack depth. The x-axis is not the passage of time. The x-axis is sorted alphabetically. And the reason I do that is it helps merge similar, I can then merge together similar stack frames. And so you get these nice wide rectangles that represent a stack frame, which is a function. And it's wide enough in many cases to draw the name of the function in there. So going from there's two ways to read it. You can either read it from the bottom up. Right at the bottom, I can see that's where my threads began and the code they executed, right down, right up to the thing that was on CPU. And if I read it top down, I'm starting with the function that's on CPU, and now show me the ancestry. A great value of the flame graphs is that the width is proportional to the value. So in this case, the width is proportional to the CPU samples. The wider it is, the more often that function was present in the profile data. So I can just navigate this quickly and see that. In fact, I should have it set up. And still have it on my screen. So this is MySQL, CPU MySQL. So it is interactive. I can mouse over elements, and it shows me how many samples and the percentage of time for that frame was present in the profile data. So there's MySQL D, join exec. And I can visually compare widths to find where things are more frequently spending its time. I can also look for these fork points, these divisions. So at this point, I'm in MySQL join exec, and it's 78% of its time is there. It's choosing to either do create sort index, which is file sort, which is 30% of the time, or the rest of the time it's doing do select. And navigating through this really gives you an idea of the code path that's actually active and the choices it's making, what forks it's taking in the code. It's really useful if you're trying to understand application internals, because if I look at the source code to an application, it can be thousands of lines long, it can be millions of lines long, but only a fraction of it is actually used. There's a whole heap of code that's doing things like startup, shutdown, all sorts of features that aren't even turned on. By creating a CPU flame graph, you're seeing what is actually running. What code paths are running. Now you can go read these. And it's much, much, much shorter list to get an idea of what the application's up to. And especially these forks in the road, where there's some if statement in here or some test where it's either doing one or the other, and it'd be great to see why, especially when that's much larger choice. So I gave I included this in my talk this morning, syscall tails. This is an interesting one because it's a kernel stack trace and it's showing different system calls. So that MySQL one was user land. This is kernel level. And there's the closed system call. There's the open system call, stat64 system call. And each of these are mini towers. And I can use my mouse to browse around, find the kernel code paths that we're in, and find those interesting points to really understand it. So this is something that can just very quickly give you familiarity with the internals of the kernel without needing to be a kernel engineer. You can also do both kernel and user stacks. So in this example, I stacked them on top of each other and divided them by a gray stripe. And so now, if I'm in user mode, my application, I get to see it. When I go into the kernel, I get to see that as well. so I can really understand who's consuming CPU. You can also do memory flame graphs. This example is memory allocation, and it's using dtrace to trace the malloc call. And instead of CPU samples on the x-axis, it's now showing bytes. And so I can navigate the paths and find which code paths in my application is mallocing the most memory, which is pretty cool. And there's different ways of doing this. Mallocs is only partially interesting. There's different types of memory flame graphs you can do as well. There's also IO time flame graphs. This example was MySQL. And it's showing me the total time I was blocked in the file system on this path. And again, I can quickly navigate it, find out whereabouts in MySQL, or why MySQL is calling into the file system, and why was I blocking. I did off-CPU time flame graphs, which is the counterpart to CPU flame graphs. Off-CPU measures the latency for all events when you block. And this one happened to be an idle MySQL server, which is pretty interesting, because you can see each of the threads and the thread pools that are handling components of MySQL that ultimately is blocking for another event. And the exciting stuff I have only done very, very recently, I did it for Lisa, was the wake-up latency flame graphs. Because off-CPU time flame graphs are not as interesting as they sound. Here, my thread pools, they're mostly blocked on conditional variables. It's like, well, there's not a lot I can do about that. I know you're blocked on a conditional variable. Why is the CV waiting? What is waiting? What is blocked such that I'm waiting for the broadcast to continue, make forward progress? And that's what you can determine by tracing the wake-up events. And so wake-up events shows who's waking up the CVs, and I can look at their durations as well. And if you want to keep going into it, I came up with a chain graph, which starts off with the off-CPU time, and then I can go up and see all of the wake-up events down to metal to see why was I blocked on that off-CPU path. This is something that I finally nutted out early this morning and included as an example of future developments of flame graphs. So those flame graphs, cloud computing very quickly. Cloud computing is another thing that's changed for systems performance. And I mentioned performance may be limited by cloud resource controls. And if you're looking at traditional documentation, it may not tell you about it because they didn't exist. It may be telling you to look at physical resources. Hardware virtualization complicates things. As you guessed, you can't analyze down to metal directly, so you want help from the provider. And the last thing is performance methodologies. I already mentioned this a little bit. Previously, we were constrained by what the vendor gave us, and so many of the methodologies resembled, say, the tools method, where for every vendor tool, you pick out the useful tool metrics, and then you look for problems based on them. Or you might have some ad hoc checklist methods. These are fine when that's all you can do, and they do solve problems. But now, I actually gave a talk at Lisa last year about performance methodologies. That video's online, the slides are online, where I talked about all sorts of other methodologies, including new methodologies that we can apply now that we have more metrics, we have dynamic tracing, things like the use method. And so that's my quick 30-minute rundown on systems performance. It's different now than it was in the 90s, and it's a little confusing because there's a lot of old documentation on it. And you can really understand how systems work, which is great. New observability visualizations and methodologies. You can still use the old performance tools. I still go and run Iostat and VMstat and SAR and all of those. They still solve problems. I still like them. But you complement them when there's better methods or missing gaps with the newer tool set. And it's a great time to be working with systems. Both in enterprise and the cloud. Thank you. And while we're getting switched over, is there any questions before I flee the stage and give it to the next exciting talk? Let me unclip. No questions? At the back, yes.
What is the easiest way to get up to speed with how you learn to use flame graphs and you know, e-trace and things like that? What are the resources you should be looking at?
So was the question, what's the easiest way to play with flame graphs?
What resources should you be looking at?
The resources you should be looking at, the CPU flame graphs are actually pretty useful, and they even solve problems of I/O latency because they light up a little bit and it makes you aware that you're in that path. So CPU flame graphs definitely, the file system I/O flame graph that I did, that's pretty simple and pretty useful. Things like off CPU time flame graphs and wake up flame graphs and chain graphs, they're getting much more advanced and difficult to poke through. But I think if you want to go like the 80-20 rule, I'd go CPU flame graphs and then say file system latency flame graphs. And then if you need to, you can go into the more advanced ones.
Hey, just one comment. I spent 5 minutes downloading flame graphs, running perf on my laptop, and got my first flame graph. So check out his blog from September last year, and that'll be a good start. One addition, so it looks like KTAP is likely to get into 3.13, the 3.13 kernel. Will that be able to work with flame graphs and the like as well?
So the question is, KTAP, it looks like KTAP may get into the kernel, which is really cool, and I should have mentioned it in my flame graphs talk, thanks for reminding me, because KTAP went to the Linux staging kernel, which is great, and if you browse the source code of KTAP, which I was doing when I was preparing for my flame graphs talk, I was getting distracted, and I'm reading through the KTAP source code, feeling guilty, because like, I know I have to give this flame graphs talk, I'm being so bad, I'm browsing KTAP. In KTAP, they have a script for doing flame graphs. So it looks like KTAP fully on board with supporting flame graphs as well. If that gets into the Linux kernel, that's great. You can already do it using perf, but KTAP allows many more things as well. Actually, KTAP should allow many of the other flame graph types, like memory and I/O latency, not CPU and those ones, which are a bit harder to do using perf.
Okay, thank you. Round of applause.
Thank you.